Greetings, dear friends. It's Dan here from the Tottenham Way. As some of you may know, we've got a sponsor this year. It's Harry's Shaving Company. If you go to harrys.com/Tottenham, you'll be able to get a trial set worth £11.95 for just £2.95. That includes a razor, shaving foam, and a travel cover. Me and Tom both use Harry's and we both like it, don't we, Tom?
We absolutely love it.
That's harrys.com/Tottenham and you'll be able to get a razor, shaving foam and a travel cover worth £11.95 for just £2.95. It's genuinely better than the traditional razors you can buy in any good pharmacy and it's much better value too. Check it out, guys, and enjoy the pod.
Dan, we have just watched the Athwell game together in my living room. First off, how was the experience?
Very nice. You made a nice pizza and garlic bread, provided beers. Can't complain. Thanks very much.
That's not an open invite to people for future games, but I'm going to start this week with a question because it seems like the only place we can start. From James Harris on Twitter, at James Harris, James C. Harris, 97. What does Kane have to do for you to personally consider him the best player you've seen? I'm going to say nothing because I do think he's the best player I've seen in a Spurs shirt live now. I don't think there's anything more that he can do football-wise or otherwise for me to just love him on a deeper level. I loved Bale because of what he did and I loved, you know, Klinsmann, Ginola, Berbatov, but there was always that undercurrent of maybe they're going to leave or maybe this isn't going to work out, maybe they're just a luxury, maybe they're the nice soft pillow that isn't very good for my back in the long run. Do you know what I mean? Harry Kane is the nice ergonomic pillow that is still comfortable. There's the metaphor for you.
Okay. I think, obviously, I'm of a certain generation and I would have previously said Bale was the best Spurs player I'd seen because there was just that time when I was going to Spurs quite regularly before I was reporting on Spurs where it just felt like he was unplayable every week and he was single-handedly destroying teams and Kane's there now, isn't he?
Mm.
I mean, he is doing... I feel like what we wanted from this pod doing it in the final whistle was that it was slightly kind of emotional and we hadn't really gathered our thoughts. And that's how I feel a little bit. It was kind of a little bit remarkable watching that, I thought, just because there wasn't much in it, I didn't think. That it was quite an even game. They had the chances. Spurs had a few chances, but Spurs chances fell to Kane and he just put them all away. And that was the difference between the teams, wasn't it?
And it was kind of the difference of last season in the Champions League where I think, did Kane only play 3 games and even by the end of that, like the last one he played, we were already out? He played against Monaco, didn't he? But he missed Leverkusen
home and away. He certainly missed Leverkusen, yeah.
And he would have missed Cesca home and away, away as well, right? So,
yeah, because Son scored the only goal.
And Jansen.
I think Jansen started up front.
Yeah, he did. And it's the difference, isn't it? These tricky away games. And I think we've mentioned a few times when we were watching it about how it felt like a Europa League fixture. It feels like that stodgy Thursday night kind of atmosphere where it's difficult to go away, where the home team is still really up for it because no matter what string of team you put out there, they're... you're still a big club coming over from one of the big leagues and they want to beat you. And it kind of felt that way for a lot of the first half. And then suddenly, we didn't even see it. We were both sort of...
eating garlic bread.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, because it didn't really expect us to maybe kick into gear until
the
second half.
Well, the ball was with Alderweireld. So I think we weren't really on guard expecting a goal. And he made that first goal look so easy. I thought it was actually... it was a kind of defensive error, but he used his body very well. And then actually the ball looked like it was kind of running away from him a little bit. But it was a a really tidy finish. And Keeper
was on him quite quickly as well.
Yeah, I think when you got it from the back angle, it looked a bit better than the kind of normal camera angle. You're going to hear me later, if you listen to the whole pod, talking about Kane at West Ham, saying how his biggest strength is his desire for improvement. And that's kind of become apparent in the way that he's getting better at things that we didn't really associate with him with previously, like free kicks, for instance. But just his consistency as well.
Yeah.
The way he pops up and one chance, one goal. That was the story of the first half, really. Yeah. And then the second half,
yeah,
I think he had probably three shots and scored twice and got the perfect hat trick. It's his ninth hat trick for Tottenham.
No.
Sixth in 2017, I think.
No, isn't it 11 in
2017? It's 11 goals in September.
Oh, of course, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, 11 goals in September, so he's got a couple for England and the rest of them, yeah. And it's another brace. Another brace. Oh, it was until, obviously, you completed the hat-trick, but he doesn't just sort of finish at one. He's always got that hunger.
I mean, at 1-0, I said to you, Kane would be a decent bet to finish as top scorer of the group stage. I didn't go so far as to the whole Champions League because I still think it's far-fetched that Spurs get to kind of the semis or final.
Yeah.
Whereas I think either Messi or Ronaldo might. But to Trunk has just asked on Twitter, had a dream, we won 1-0 at the Bernabeu and Kane scored. Shall I put a bet on?
Yeah. If you're probably better off like somehow us winning 4-3 rather than a 1-0. I don't think we're keeping a clean sheet anytime soon out in Bernabeu. But the guy is at that stage now. He's at that level where... So a few years ago, and I hate to bring it up, obviously, but Arsenal went to Bernabeu and Henri scored a winner out there because he was at his peak, completely unplayable on the biggest stage. And I just think, why not? Why can't Kane be... I think he's going to score at least one goal against Real Madrid in the two fixtures that we've got against him. I have nothing to base that on apart from his brilliance so far. I don't really know what Real Madrid would do to in defence to sort of combat him. But I just think he's... You said, you know, every stage isn't the top for him. It's not the very summit of what he can achieve and what he wants to achieve as well. He's going to want to go to the Bernabeu and score. He's going to want to go there and help the team get something out of that fixture. Mm. However unrealistic it is, because that's what he does.
Just to go a bit more tactical, Tom Colomossi on Twitter of The Standard made the point that Llorente coming on was quite a clever move because it meant that he went as a central striker, Kane kind of dropped back into the number 10 role, and that freed him up to score the second and third goals, which I thought was interesting because at the time, I think we both looked at each other when Llorente came on for Aurier at 1-0 and thought, okay, that's quite an interesting move. But it really worked, didn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Well, he managed to sort of find a bit more space with that. And I think we were looking at going, is this going to be 4-4-2? And it seemed as if the move itself was to help out the defence that was starting to be... I mean, Aurier was caught a couple of times with the ball sort of in behind him. And I think that the move itself was to try and help out the defence. But I suppose there were other options on the bench to do that without bringing on a second striker. And it was quite an aggressive move from Pochettino to try and just... It was 1-0 at the time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I think it was there to... It was there to free up perhaps Kane and Son and even Sissoko as well. Because Sissoko moved a little bit wider and I thought he actually did quite well there.
Yeah.
What do you
think we should come on to Sissoko?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's probably part of a wider point or of a wider discussion about the tactics in general. We were talking before the game, we recorded a short video for Twitter, for the Tottenham Way Twitter, about how we thought we was going to line up. We were talking about is the possibility of Trippier going left. In fact, BT Sport had Aurier as part of the front three behind Kane. So it sort of shows you just how unsure everybody was and how we was going to line up. how we did line up eventually was Trippier on the left, Ben Davis as part of the three. How do you think we did overall with that? And considering we had seven players out, we worked it out at the break, I think. It was Vertonghen, Rose, Lamela, Eriksen, Dembele, Wanyama and Ali for this game for various different reasons. You know, really tricky. We've just gone out there and smashed them 3-0. But tactically, how did you think we lined up and how successful do you think it was?
Well, I think the only thing you can say in hindsight is that Spurs won a Champions League game away 3-0 with seven players out. I mean, that's really all that matters, and that is really impressive, no matter who the opposition was. I was happy with the lineup. I like the fact that he used Ben Davis as the third centre-back because I think he's obviously been really solid there for Wales in the past, especially at Euro 2016. And Pochettino seems to have been really reluctant to use him there in the past. So I think the game that stands out is Man City away last year, the 2-2.
Yeah.
When there was a bit of a crisis at centre-back and he ended up using Wanyama back there ahead of Davis. And that surprised me. And I think there have been a couple of opportunities for Pochettino in the past to use Davis as the left-sided third centre-back and he hasn't taken them. So I like the fact that he did that and I think Davis, you know, as expected, really looked pretty solid there. He knows what he's doing. I don't particularly like Trippier as the left wing back, but
no.
I guess once you've made that call, Davis is the only option he had. And I thought Trippier, you know, obviously did much better when he moved to the right, crossing for Kane's hat-trick goal.
Yeah.
But I thought on the whole that it was
it's job done, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's job done. I mean, it was a formation I would have played, but I would have been tempted to use Foyth. But what Pochettino has said in the past is he wants a left-footed player on the left side of the back three.
Yeah.
And he wants a right-footed player on the right side of the back three. And I think he spoke about that in relation to Wimmer last year, why Wimmer wasn't getting game time. So obviously that's important to him, and Foyth is right-footed. So that might explain why he didn't kind of trust him to play there tonight.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I thought it is job done. I thought the first half wasn't particularly impressive and you know, I thought on the whole it was one of Alderweireld's poorest games I can remember for a long time. He gave the ball away repeatedly. But, he got the assist for the first goal, so that can't be overlooked.
I know what you mean, but I think...
I thought he was really poor.
I think there's a wider problem with Toby as well. I think he started the season really, really badly. And we sort of mentioned Vertonghen very briefly in the West Ham bit that's coming up in a bit. But we're talking about how Vertonghen seems to be relishing his role in that back three at the moment. And is it perhaps the positional change for Alderweireld, considering Sanchez has come in as a sweeper, pushed Toby?
Yeah, I mean, Alderweireld used to play the sweeper role, and it might just be that he's adjusting to playing a slightly different position. I mean, it's possible that he's just still a bit tentative after that injury he got last year, because it was a really nasty one. And I think at the time he said, you know, I was a bit worried about my career. Like, it was nerve damage, I think, in his left leg.
ACL, wasn't it? Or everyone was concerned that he'd done ACL. Yeah,
it ended up being nerve damage. And I think it was one of those injuries where Pochettino kept saying, oh, he'll be back next week. You know, we expect him back in training. And every time he came back, it was too painful and he just couldn't do it. And so it ended up being quite a nasty injury and it was a long time out. And I just wonder if he's still getting over it. I know that sounds a bit mad because it's a long time ago, but you know, some injuries do take a while to get over, and I don't think he's ever quite been.
When did he actually come back? Because it was
he came back for the kind of Spartak Moscow game.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, I think.
You know, certainly he's playing a slightly different role. He used to be the last line of defence, and now in the new back three. It's Sanchez.
Yeah, fair enough. You mentioned Sissoko earlier. Paul Moss at Paul Moss 0447 has asked, can Sissoko actually make it at Spurs after all? Two good games in a row. So I think we do mention him slightly in the West Ham bit again that's coming up, but I think we say how it was decent without being great, and I think he was the same tonight, wasn't he?
I thought he was a bit better tonight. I mean, what I wrote a piece, and I mentioned this in the second half of the pod, about Sissoko after the West Ham game. I wrote it for ESPN, and I said what he needs is a kind of big goal or big assist or a memorable moment. And you could say that assist for Harry Kane was pretty important. I mean, it was 1-0 at the time. Mm. Abuel was still very much in the game. And
can we say categorically that he meant it?
Well, I think he did. I mean, he kind of kept
I love
cool.
that you thought that. Yeah. Well, yeah, probably, yes.
But, I mean, it wasn't an unbelievable assist, but he certainly had kept a cool head and did the right thing and found Kane in space, and that was important. And so I think that counts as a good contribution. I think he was good again tonight. And
you mentioned towards the end of the game when he was taken off that you thought it was maybe a like a Poch move. It wasn't just he's tired or he's got a knock or anything. You thought that him being taken off was a chance to maybe for the fans to maybe sort of give him a bit of appreciation for a decent
performance. Yeah, I think so. I think it was a Poch move in both centres because he brought on Georgiou, who's I think half Cypriot, gave him a debut in Cyprus, which is obviously a nice touch. I think it's fair to say that Poch probably doesn't have great plans for him in the first team this year and probably rates Oakley Booth above him. But I think he wanted to give him a debut in Cyprus, which is a nice thing to do. And I think he wanted to give Sissoko a chance to be clapped off and boost his confidence even further, because I think he probably deserved it on the basis of the last week when he's been good against West Ham and very good tonight.
Yeah, I still feel like there's an element of starting to trust him. Like, I'm still very wary about saying, yeah, okay, yeah, absolutely.
One of the things I said to you during the game is I still wonder if Kane fully trusts him. There were a couple of times where Kane didn't really want to pick him out in the box. And, you know, perhaps getting the assist from him will change his thinking. I mean, I can't say he's definitely thinking that, but it did look that way. So perhaps he's still earning the trust of some of the Spurs players as well.
Yeah, perhaps. Really good question here from Tommy Collins at CollinsT26. And it's about Harry Winks, who had a really good game tonight, and what would probably be considered his full return from injury. Is it his first start? Did he play against Barnsley?
Yeah, he played against Barnsley.
Okay, well, first decent start, let's say. Is it fair to say Harry Winks should feature heavily in the kind of games where we're expected to have most of the ball? So this is obviously more of a bit broader question. I certainly think things like Swansea at home and a Burnley at home come to mind, and I know that he was injured for it, but we're definitely still thinking along the lines of Dembele being first choice centre mid and with Wanyama as well. But the longer that Dembele is out with his various different problems, Winks is the obvious sort of heir to the throne, isn't he? But he's shown a little bit more than just being an able deputy, do you think?
Yeah, I thought he was kind of quietly excellent tonight, which is, I think, what we said at some point in the second half. He caught my eye quite early on when he kind of just picked up the ball and nonchalantly found Trippier on the left, and then the Trippier crossed to Son, and Son should really have scored a header from about 5 yards. And that's what he did all evening. And I think when he came on against West Ham, what impressed me, particularly given the length of time he's been out and the fact that he's talked about ankle pain since that injury at Burnley, was his running with the ball and his running off the ball as well. He just looked like he was really keen just to sprint up and down the pitch as much as possible. And I saw that again tonight, and there was a really good moment in the second half where he won a foul after kind of taking on about 3 or 4 Upwell players, charging through the middle of them. And we didn't really see that side of him last year. You know, we saw him more as the kind of keep ball pass master midfielder, I think it's fair to say. And it shows he's got a bit more confidence. If he's willing to add this kind of push and thrust to his game where he wants to beat a man and take a player on, then he's much more well equipped to actually do the Dembele job, because that's what Dembele does.
He gains you
ground. And Winks did that for Spurs tonight, and I think there was a really encouraging performance from him. And I think Dembele is still a doubt for Huddersfield. when Yammer won't be fit for Huddersfield. So, yeah, he's got a really good chance to start a Premier League game, having started the Champions League game now, and really kind of stake a claim for a place.
Yeah, I agree. We've had another question from Matt James Healy, at Matt James Healy. Thoughts on Sanchez? Thought he looked comfortable, solid and unfussy, sort of performance that will go unnoticed in the best possible way. And when you consider, obviously, with a, let's say, an untested left-sided centre-back of the three, certainly at Spurs, Sanchez really has slotted in really well at sweeper, hasn't he? And when you consider Toby's form, plus the fact that Vertonghen has been suspended for this game, so it's sort of an ever-changing partnerships that he's going to have to be forming, and he just looks really at home playing in centre of defence, doesn't he? And he's 21,
yeah.
Quite lots of promising signs there, isn't there?
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that, really. I think he settled in really quickly. It's already kind of easy to forget that he only joined Spurs in the last week of the window, like all the other new signings.
Yeah, I think it
almost, just because he was the first one, it almost feels like, oh, he's been here a lot longer.
It's easy to forget as well, it was our record signing by quite a significant distance.
Yeah.
By a good 15 odd million now, isn't it? He was £44 million or something like that.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think you look at Aurier and, you know, again tonight, I thought he was good, but he still doesn't. You still don't look at him and say, oh, you know, that's the Serge Aurier we're going to be getting in 6 months' time or a year's time. I thought he was, you know, he crossed too often when he should have been dribbling. He dribbled too often when he should have crossed. And, you know, there were various moments where you thought, you know, that's still a player settling into the club, especially after what happened at West Ham. I think with Sanchez, even though he's younger, you're looking at him and thinking, you know, that could have been a player that's been here for, you know, 6 months or a year.
Yeah.
And that's what I took away from Everton, which was his debut, just how comfortable he looked in quite a niche role, that deep centre-back role, where you are literally the last line of defence for Tottenham. You are the guy who is between the goal and the striker more often than not. So I think, yeah, he's been really good, and he's already a kind of key player after, what, 4 or 5 appearances?
Yeah, it's quite strange, really, to see that. You just don't really notice it, do you? Real Madrid beat Dortmund in Germany tonight, 3-1. So we're obviously, you said it before the Dortmund game about how it was almost like a 6-game playoff between Spurs and Dortmund, and it was going to come down to the two games that we played against each other and then whatever else you could pick up along the way. We're now 6 points ahead of Dortmund going into a doubleheader with Real Madrid. We have to probably assume that they're going to get 6 points out of Apoel. Then we're playing each other, and then they've got Real Madrid in the last game of the group stage, and we've got Apoel at home. Where do you think this win puts us in with regards to the group, and how, I mean, you know, our points are on the board at the end of the day, aren't they? So is that going to come into the...
Yeah, bird in the hand is better than two in the bush.
Mm.
But it still feels like early days, because as you said, Spurs have got the doubleheader against Real, and... You know, let's be honest, that could easily be no points.
Yeah.
I mean, Real, I mean, that could easily be no points. And then Dortmund have got the doubleheader against Apoel, and you'd expect them to get 6 points.
Mm.
So in a couple of games' time, you know, you'd think it would probably be all square if you were a betting man.
Yeah.
Between Spurs and Dortmund. And then it comes down to, we've got to go to their place and then play Real at home. Play Apoel.
Yeah, Apoel at home is the last game.
So, I still think it's really early days and there's everything to play for. So I still see it as coming down. I still see the games against Dortmund as being the key. Obviously, Spurs have got the win at Wembley and that's huge. And now that the game at Westfalenstadion will probably be the big one.
What do you think is realistic for Spurs in the Champions League this season?
I mean, again, it's still early days. And I don't know, really. I think
Well, what should we be aiming for? When you think of... Okay, I'll rephrase the question.
With Harry Kane looking as good as he is, and given that performance, given the Dortmund performance, with Ali to come back, with Eriksen to come back, with the long-term absentees still out, there's every chance Spurs could do something in the Champions League this season.
Okay, well, let me rephrase the question a little bit, though. So, considering what we've done in the league in the last two seasons, we have challenged for the title, where Pochettino has taken us from and where he's taken us to, and we are technically Champions League regulars, I guess, now. Certainly aspiring regulars. Are we a little bit skewed by what Harry Redknapp did with us in 2010-11? The fact that he got us to the quarterfinals of it, and then we were obviously just completely smashed to pieces by Real Madrid.
Well, that's one way of looking at it, but the other way of looking at it is that we've been completely skewed by what happened last year. Because I think if you think back to before the Champions League campaign last season, there was a lot of feeling, or at least there were people saying that, you know, Spurs could be the surprise package this year. They could do a Dortmund of a few years ago, or they could do an Atletico. Because Pochettino is such a good coach and they've been so defensively solid in the Premier League, and they've got all these great players going forward. So there was real optimism before last year's campaign, and it just fell so flat at Wembley. And Spurs just looked so naive and like a young team that they were, that it kind of flipped on its head and everyone said, well, Spurs aren't really ready for this, and you know, that's the next step. So, having done what, you know, been even better, I think, in the Premier League last year, you know, there should have been more optimism this season, but it was kind of, I suppose, tainted by what happened last season.
And maybe tempered by the draw as well.
Yeah, and tempered by the draw completely. Mm. So, having beat Dortmund at Wembley, I think Spurs, and having done that away from home, I think Spurs can be really optimistic. I suppose a good marker will be Real. I mean, Dortmund, I think Peter Bosch for Dortmund hasn't really tested himself in Europe. I don't think they're going to be quite the force that they were in Europe, certainly under Klopp. So I think the games against Real Madrid will give us a better indicator of what Spurs can do. If they go and really equip themselves in both games, then we can be really optimistic.
Just don't get smashed to pieces. Lovely.
Because most teams do. I mean, it looks like Dortmund got a pretty good pacing tonight.
Yeah, Juventus got done over in the Champions League final last year. Like the 4-1, 3-1, 4-1. So, yeah. Okay, great. Well, we're going to end the Appwell chat there. And what you're about to hear is our thoughts on the West Ham game that's just happened on Saturday. And then we'll be back in a little bit and we'll be doing some Huddersfield chat as well, won't we?
Yes, we will.
All right, see you in a bit. Okay, so all being well, you would have just heard our thoughts on the Appwell game. It's a bit of a non-linear Tottenham way this week, isn't it, Dan? But through no fault of our own, we're trying to be time conscious.
Yeah,
it's going to work out. I'm sure it'll be absolutely fine.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Absolutely fine. So we're going to talk about West Ham here. Derby win. Poch, after the game, said that it made him feel alive. What is it about him that likes to do this sort of thing? I mean, I know it's slightly out of his control, but seems to like this kind of fevered craziness of a derby game. Like, it's almost as if a 3-0 win would have been very underwhelming for him to go home after.
Well, I wonder whether this was the first meeting with West Ham that Poch has really taken as seriously as a big London derby. Because obviously he won his very first game against West Ham. Dyer scored. And then the last 2 years, we all know what happened. It's been really disappointing from a Spurs point of view. And in both cases, really damaging to the title pushes. And before the game, Poch was speaking about, you know, we're taking this, you know, as seriously as Arsenal and Chelsea. He said, it's like a derby, it's like Arsenal, it's like Chelsea. And I just wonder whether in previous years he hasn't really thought that way. He's just thought it's little old West Ham. But this year, he's seen them raise their game in the last two seasons, and he's been a bit more prepared for it. That was kind of my impression from his pre-match press conference. I didn't actually go to the post-match one where he said he was alive. I was in the mix zone, but I just wonder whether this was a year that the Poch knew what was coming a little bit more, and him and Tottenham were a bit more prepared.
Bilic has kind of had his number a little bit as well. If you look at, even apart from the 4-1 win we had against them, I mean, the year before we drew 2-2 with them, didn't we? I'm not sure if Bilic was in charge at that point. I can't remember. It may have still been
Allardyce. Didn't Bilic come in the same summer as Poch? Was it Bilic's first game as well?
No, Allardyce. It was Allardyce, but I actually, thinking about it now, I think it was Allardyce twice in the first season. But season after, we obviously won 4-0, but we lost at Upton Park in the last game there, or the last Spurs game there. And then we've cut it fine season after, didn't we? Going 2-1 down with 88 minutes, and then we won it in the last five.
Yeah, I mean, and
then we lost again at the London Stadium, and then this season we've kind of made it a little bit difficult for ourselves. But it was, I mean...
And Bilic, after that 3-2 win at White Hart Lane for Spurs, said, I think, that they had a very clear game plan and they'd stuck to it, and it was really working until the last few minutes. Mm. Basically, until Son came on and changed the game, it was really working. So I think he has always set up in a certain way against Pochettino teams, and it's tended to work for him. And it was interesting after the game hearing him say that actually they targeted Aurier, so that they tried to put him under a bit of pressure. They knew it was his Premier League debut, obviously.
That was definitely evident in the first 20 minutes. Arnautovic, of all people, really seemed to sort of take him to town
But so I think, you know, Bilic has his reputation as not very tactically astute. He's a bit of a motivator, but he doesn't really have a philosophy or a game plan. But I think when it comes to the big games against Tottenham, he's really known what he's been doing, and he's set up in a certain way to hurt Spurs, and it's worked. Obviously, on Saturday, it didn't. But I do think, you know, for me, if I was to kind of surmise the game, I think there were two major turning points. And the first one was Antonio's injury and Carroll coming on. I did think that West Ham were kind of shading it before then. And as you said, Arnautovic was having a bit of joy on the left. Mm. Obviously, Carroll came on, lost the ball twice, and suddenly Spurs were 2-0 up. And then I thought the other turning point was Bazoria sending off. And, you know, from Carroll's introduction to his sending off, I really thought Spurs were in complete control.
Yeah.
And then West Ham did quite well with the extra man and put Spurs under a lot of pressure, and it could easily have been a draw.
Yeah, we'll go on to Aurier in a bit. Aurier? Does anyone know?
Either or, mate. It's better than when you started calling Tim Sherwood Shearwood.
Shearwood, yeah. Although you still call Poch Pock every so often, which I know.
I think that's more just like, I don't know, it's like it slips out. I didn't consciously mean to do it.
No. Yeah, that's fair enough.
It's like you start saying Pochettino and...
Yeah, true, yeah. We'll call him Serge. We'll come on to Serge in a little bit, because we should, you know, it's an overwhelmingly positive result when you consider the disappointment that we had at Wembley against Swansea the week before. You know, this was a big morale boosting win, but we seem like an away team now, don't we? We seem to be able to, you said it there, they shaded, didn't really sort of land any punches probably in the first half an hour, but they shaded that. But we soaked it up, and then suddenly within the space of 4 minutes, we were 2-0 up. And that is largely to do with that front three of Eriksen, Ali and Kane. They combined for the first goal. And actually, the second goal as well, wasn't it? Was it Eriksen's ball?
Yeah,
Vertonghen?
Eriksen flicked it with a really nice touch into Vertonghen, who was just loving playing that third centre-back role and was roaming forward as well as he ever has. I think it's no coincidence, though, that Spurs look better on the road. And the first two West Ham goals were a really good example of why, I think. In both cases, West Ham, as the home team, were kind of going for it. They were going direct to Carroll. They were trying to hurt Tottenham by getting the ball to him as soon as possible. And in both cases, he lost the ball, and West Ham had men up the pitch. And they'd left Ali, Kane and Eriksen, you know, in a relatively dangerous situation, I think, you know, against, whatever, three or four men at the back. And there's no way that West Ham come to Wembley and leave Ali, Kane and Eriksen against three or four of their defenders. Mm. They put more men behind the ball.
Yeah.
And that's what the teams have done. That's what Swansea did. That's what Barnsley did. Even Chelsea did that to an extent.
Yeah,
So I think it's no coincidence Spurs having more joy on the road at the moment. And Kane and Vertonghen afterwards in the mix zone kind of alluded to it and said, yeah, you know, they didn't want to go big on it because I don't think they want to exacerbate the problems at home. But they definitely said, you know, yeah, you know, it might be true that there's a bit more space at home. And I just don't think that at Wembley, Carroll tries that pass for the first goal.
Yeah.
And even if he does, I don't think West Ham have a few players back against Ali, Kane and Eriksen. And Ali got the ball first time from Eriksen. I think he crossed first time. And it was just that quickly, wasn't it? It was almost 3 or 4 touches.
So there was a thing that I read on The Guardian a few weeks back, or maybe a couple of weeks ago, before the first round of Champions League games. And they were pinpointing some of the teams' front three. They were saying it was a point about how loads of Europe's top teams play three up front. And at PSG, it was Neymar, Cavani, and probably the wrong example to use, but like, you know, they were talking about, you know, Barcelona have obviously got Messi and Suarez and one other, and United with Lukaku, Mkhitaryan, and Martial or something like that. And we weren't actually included on that list. And they went all the way down to some fairly very good and probably better teams than Tottenham. But I certainly don't think there's a lot of front threes in European football at the moment that play better than Kane, Ali and Eriksen. Aside from those very, very top clubs.
I suppose because last year the thing was that there were the three players that got over 20 goals. But the third one was Son, not Eriksen. Mm. But Son didn't play every league game, and he got
9 against Millwall.
So I suppose Eriksen wasn't really thought of as part of that Tottenham front three, was he? He was always thought of as the kind of deeper playmaker. But there's the interesting thing about the game that we're yet to watch, but we know the lineup for the Epwell match is that there's obviously only Kane in there.
Mm.
And it does feel like there's a lot on him because there's always pressure on him. He's pretty much been Spurs' main striker for the last 3 years. Now he's got Llorente, and it remains to be seen how that works out. But Kane and Ali and Eriksen and Son have really been good in the last 18 months at relieving some of that pressure off him and scoring a lot of the goals.
Yeah, definitely. Ali's coming for a little bit. Well, he's coming for criticism over probably the last few weeks, really. And we mentioned it last week about how it does take him a while to warm up. It took him a while last season to warm up. He didn't really get going until December. But, you know, we're looking at on Saturday, he got himself an assist and his run for the second goal shot at heart and then it fell back to Kane. It's not an assist as such, but he's very, very much involved in that goal. And he's got 3 goals this season as well, including one of the most important ones we've had against Newcastle to get us off the mark, scored the winner against Barnsley in midweek as well. Is the criticism, what have you got to say about it? Because for me, it just looks as if it's people, in a way, it feels like the August and Kane thing. It's a bit like, oh, it's a thing now. Or it's just
he's slow starts.
Well, not so much, but more look, that's it's a it's just the
it's
only
a talking
stick,
point.
The only stick you can beat.
Yeah,
I think
like the strange thing about Ali is I thought he was kind of dreadful in many ways against West Ham. There are a lot of things that just didn't come off for him. He lost the ball, or he kind of run it out of play. He'd lose it with a pass, but he still did end the game with 2 assists and. That's kind of Ali now, isn't it?
Mm.
Like he tends to not do a great deal, but he's really effective and influencing the game in the final third, and he ends up being a match winner or playing a big part in the result. And I think as long as he's doing that, I mean, what can you say, really? I think it's fair to say that he hasn't really got his iron.
Yeah.
Like he's trying a lot of shots. They're not quite coming off. He's trying a lot of the usual stuff. They're not quite coming off. It's not quite coming off, and he doesn't look like the Ali at his best from January onwards last season yet. Mm. But it's almost the same as when Kane wasn't scoring last year very briefly and when he wasn't scoring in August. He's still influencing games, still having a massive impact on them. So, I mean,
it's hard to argue, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean,
at the moment, he's
I feel like
his numbers look great at the moment.
Pochettino gets loads of questions about Ali, understandably, and I feel can almost empathise with him now, because a lot of the time he just says, well, you know, he's a young player, I'm very happy with him, of course he can improve, of course he can do better, but you know what he's doing is fantastic and I'm happy with him.
Yeah,
and I kind of agree with that. Like, I think we've been saying for the last like 2 years on here that we fully expect Ali to have a dip at some point, and it never really happened in the first kind of 18 months, two years. And at the beginning of last season, he was below par, but he was still getting the odd goal, and he was still
exactly the
getting
same.
The odd assists. And yeah, same story.
If a subpar player is still getting you two assists and he's still your second highest scorer, and we're only just coming towards this end of September, then sod it. Like, let him get on with it, to be honest, and let him play himself into form. And then you look at someone like Kane, who is just... has the blue touch paper's been ignited, and Eriksen has started the season better than anyone, and certainly more consistent than he's ever started a league season with us before. I'd hesitate to use the term getting away with it, but we've got that in reserve, haven't we? We've got a really good players around him.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'll say is that Pochettino did allude a couple of weeks ago to kind of off-field problem, not so much problems as off-field things to sort out for Ali, and he is changing his agent. I think he's without an agent at the moment, and he's been courted by all the biggest names in that world.
Jorge Mendes is the one.
Yeah, Mina Raiola and all the super agents want to sign him for obvious reasons, because there's a very good chance that he is going to be the next world record transfer. So, I don't know, I can't imagine what that's like, but I imagine that he's not as settled as he could be at the moment, but I guess that'll be almost be like his transfer window closing. You know, once that's sorted, you can just knuckle down, focus on football completely, and he might improve once that's done.
Yeah. Do you want to add anything on Kane? Because I mean, it feels like there's nothing more we can say on him, is there? It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. The only thing I want to add on Kane is the free kick, really, because I think when... Yeah, as you said, I think it was you that said it on Twitter, like, the most spectacular thing about Kane is that brace felt quite every day.
Yeah.
It didn't feel that abnormal. It was Harry Kane scored another double. It wasn't a particularly great performance by his standards, but he scored two goals. And I think kind of Mark Noble said it afterwards, like, Spurs fans need to realise, and I'm sure all Spurs fans do, that they've got a really, really special player, because it would be easy to start taking it for granted. But the free kick interests me, because I think Kane's biggest strength is he's relentless desire to improve, always. And almost like in my mind, I was thinking, Kane can't possibly maintain this level. At some point he's going to dip, almost like Ali. But actually, he's just adding sort of new strings to his bow all the time.
Yeah,
and he's not scored a free kick since that breakthrough one against Villa, which took a massive deflection.
That is true, yeah.
And he hit the post with an absolute cracker against West Ham.
Yeah.
It almost feels like he's taking over those duties from Eriksen, who hasn't scored for the best part of 2 years, I think, since that double at Swansea. And he's a bit, Ronaldo-esque. He compared him, he talks about striving to be like Ronaldo and Messi after the game. And I don't think Ronaldo was Man U's free kick taken when he first came, but I mean, I could be wrong. It took him a while to get there, and then suddenly it was this unbelievable strength he had. And Kane almost feels like he's doing the same thing. Like he's adding new ways to score all the time, and that's just one example. It wouldn't surprise me if in 6 months' time, everyone was talking about Harry Kane over free kicks because he's scored two or three crackers.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of player he is. He's constantly trying to improve.
It feels like Harry Kane has got a personal vendetta against everyone on Twitter to make them look as stupid as possible. But I know it sounds really ridiculous, but when he first got into the team, it was most Spurs fans, this has been going on over so many times, but I've been thinking about it recently, it's like most Spurs fans were like, the guy's never really going to make it. Then he kind of makes it into the team and becomes our top striker. And then outside of Spurs, it became he only scores tap-ins and penalties, and he scores screamers against Arsenal and Chelsea and stuff like that. Then it's, oh, well, he never does it in the big games. And he's, again, Arsenal, Chelsea, Dortmund. He's getting Dortmund. Well, he doesn't score against the big teams in the big moments. Scores two against Dortmund, like, again, like it's an everyday thing. And it almost feels as if, I mean, they're still going to point the international thing in, but who I couldn't
care less, really. That's definitely Kane's biggest strength, his mentality. I mean, you look at him as a player, he doesn't have any, at least at a first glance, he doesn't have any attributes where you think, oh, that's world class, you know, he's the quickest player in the league, or he's the strongest, or whatever. But his desire to improve is by far the best in the Premier League.
His world class attributes are ones that you can work on. Finishing and strength as well. Like his strength for the Dortmund goal. All right, people can say that it's probably a foul, and in a Premier League game, 9 times out of 10, a referee would give that as a foul, and in Europe, even more often than that. But all the things that you can work on, he does know his limitations. He knows he's not the quickest, but his pace is actually pretty good, and that's something you can almost work on. Just how do I make myself quicker than I am? If that one makes sense.
And there was a tweet from Spurs official a few weeks ago, which was marking the anniversary, I think, of Kane's first goal, which was probably in the Europa League or UEFA Cup against someone very small.
Ever for Spurs,
yeah. The 4 or 5 year anniversary of that, or maybe it was 6 years. I don't know. Wow. Anyway, it was a really young Kane, and he looks like a completely different person.
Yeah.
Because he's so much stronger now. And then after the game against West Ham, he said, you know, oh, I'm getting stronger all the time. And I think what I'm trying to say in a roundabout way is that, I suppose in my head, I did, you know, wonder if Harry Kane could keep it up. But the more I see of him, I just, you know, wonder how much better he's going to become.
Yeah.
And what his limit is, because he has talked about Ronaldo and Messi, and we think it's absurd, but actually his numbers are comparable to them in this calendar year.
Yeah, literally.
2017, yeah, literally. I think he's got a better shots to goal ratio than both of them.
He's got a better games to goal ratio than Messi.
Better games to goal ratio than Ronaldo. I think not quite at Messi's yet.
Maybe.
But for this calendar year. So if he continues that, and who would doubt that he would, he's just going to keep smashing records.
Yeah, if he stays injury free, he's going to absolutely fly. We should move on to Big Bad Serge. I was very, very harsh on him at the weekend. I was very angry that he got his second yellow. It's not so much the second yellow, it's the nature of it. If he'd have got his second yellow, if his two yellows were the other way round, so that first one was a bad tackle stopping a break, and the second one was just him cutting across someone and, you know, sort of half challenging for a header, and it was his last warning. But the decision that he made in West Ham's half with, it was Andy Carroll of all people, that guy's not getting away from you, he can barely move, and it was a really bad tackle. And at the time of the game, where they just got a goal back, you know, they're going to pile everything into the box, and again, Andy Carroll's on the pitch, so he's always going to be a handful for a team that is trying to lay siege to a goal. And it just felt like the stupidest decision. And afterwards, I was like, okay, well, I'm probably a little bit harsh on him there. But what did you think of that as sending off? And, you know, it was his debut, but he was given a bit of a torrid time. And it looked as if he probably could have got about 3 or 4 bookings throughout the entire game, as good as his performance was overall.
Yeah, that's it. I like him. I think he's really positive. Yeah. And I think he's going to be a really good player. I think he looks to go forward every opportunity. He's quick, and he looks like a footballer, and by that, I mean, I suppose you don't worry about his kind of touch or his control in the same way that we have about Sissoko when he first came.
Yeah, when he first came.
Well, yeah, and I think we're going to move on to that, aren't we?
We'll have a little moment.
But I think, it was stupid, but I didn't think it was that bad. I just thought it was, as Bilic said, that they seem to be targeting him, and they got it right. And I think it was just I hate to sound like a kind of like Pochettino or like a, but it was a lesson, wasn't it? Like you can't get away with that in the Premier League, or as maybe in Liga.
Say not at PSG now, sunshine.
Yeah, exactly. Like maybe in France, you're catching that guy, or you can afford to be a bit more reckless. And I think he will learn from that. And it was just, it was just one of those things.
Yeah, fair enough. I think we should mention Sissoko, because he's kind of playing his way in, isn't he, a little bit? And the door's been left open by the other Musa being seemingly just, he's never going to be 100% fit, really, is he, Dembele? But the door seems to have been left open for Sissoko to just sort of prove himself as, do you have a use for this squad? And it never really seemed to work for him out wide for a number of different reasons. But it's this kind of roaming central winger role that he's got at the moment. He doesn't stay. He's certainly not a Dembele that's going to put his foot on the ball and get you 10 yards up the pitch. But he's kind of attacking space where there is on the right-hand side of the pitch, helping out Aurier as well in the first half.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to make. He had a good understanding with Aurier, especially in the first half. And I think after 10 minutes or something, he back-heeled, taking out a West Ham player and released Aurier on the right wing, which is a really good moment because it sort of showed he's getting a bit of confidence. And, he trusts Aurier, he knew where he was.
Do you think it's just, it is confidence for him? Do you think that's all it is? And because he'd had a bit of a battering at Newcastle, and rightly so, the guy down tools by all accounts for a while.
Yeah, I think
we spent a lot of money on him as well. He was our record, I think he was our record signing, at least for a short time, or for the season until Sanchez came in. So does it feel a little bit unfair when it's considering this guy is clearly talented, he's obviously does enough to get into the France team, had a really good Euros as well. He can destroy teams as he showed at Newcastle, but was it just a case of this guy's confidence being in absolute pieces when he joined Spurs, and since then he's maybe not had the platform to kind of build that up because the team's been too good for him to get into?
I think there's definitely a case to be made for that. Just everything went wrong from last year, and I did a piece for ESPN on him in the last few days. And the one moment that I kind of riffed off in the article that I quite liked was when he squared up to Noble that everyone's kind of sharing on Twitter, because I think it was a moment where he kind of felt like a Pochettino player.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
He wasn't just pissed off at a tackle.
Well, no, he was the one who tackled Noble. He fouled Noble, and then Noble kind of charged into him, and he just stood his ground. It'd be easy to read way too much into it, but I remember, in the past there was that moment where Dier kind of stood up to Costa. I can't remember what it was.
League Cup final,
and apparently that was the point where Pochettino said, "You're my man, you're my sergeant, I can trust you." And these things do matter in a way, and Sissoko hasn't really ever looked up for the fight. And that could be a confidence thing. He's not really ever looked invested in the team. He's not really ever looked like he's sort of part of Pochettino's philosophy or plan. But just that, just that squaring up to Noble and kind of fighting for himself and his teammates goes back to that stuff Pochettino was saying about going out for dinner and fostering this team spirit. So you fight for everyone.
Yeah.
I think he suddenly looks a bit more integrated. But The question is, is he in the team because there's no one else? Because Dembele's unfit, Wanyama's not been fit, Winks has not been fit.
But maybe
Ali's missed a couple of Champions League.
There's plenty of examples of players around the league that have got their chance and excelled.
The interesting thing will be Pochettino's saying all the right things, Sissoko's saying all the right things. He's improving. He's doing all right. The interesting thing will be when everyone's fit, is he getting a look in?
Everyone's
fit.
Yeah, and probably not, but at least he's showing himself to be more of a use to the squad.
Clearly he is quite effective at kind of charging into those spaces. And I think, again, it's an away thing. West Ham left a lot of space, and he was able to get into that. He was able to link up with Aurier. And at times I thought he looked very effective, though, as I said in the article, I would be really wary of kind of over-egging what was a good performance, but certainly not a great performance.
I think that's fair enough. Certainly. I don't think it was magnificent. Okay, well, that's West Ham done. As I say, we are just about to watch the Apple game now. So after this, you're likely to hear a little bit more on that, a little bit of a Huddersfield preview and some listener questions. Okay, so that's our thoughts on West Ham. We've got Huddersfield in another early kickoff on Saturday. Obviously, we're pretty good away from home. Huddersfield had a really good start to the season. By all accounts, they've had 6 games, got 9 points, only conceded 3 goals. No, conceded 5 goals, scored 6. They seem, you know, reasonably well acquitted to the Premier League already, so it's going to be a pretty difficult game. So how do we have to combat that as a, in terms of how we line up? Do we have to change much of what we did against West Ham last weekend? Or do we go perhaps with Harry Winks after a good performance tonight against Applewell to try and sort of keep the ball and keep it moving? What do we do?
Yeah, it's going to be the kind of good selection headache, isn't it, for Pochettino? Because I don't think Dembele will be fit. The impression I got after West Ham from Pochettino's comments was that he wasn't confident. So I would kind of expect Dembele not to play that one. And given how good Winks was tonight against Applewell, I think he can probably afford to rest Dembele again, even if he is okay. That's provided Winks is able to play kind of twice in quick succession. So, I mean, I think obviously Aurier suspended, so Trippier plays right wing back. Vertonghen will come back, so Davis will move back to left wing back.
I was going to ask that. I mean, is it Trippier experiment is? It's not going to be a long term thing in
no,
any way.
I think he's sort of plugging a gap, wasn't he? And I think the back five kind of picks itself, or the back six rather, including Lloris. And then there's a few interesting selection decisions in midfield, and I would expect Ali to come back in. I would expect Eriksen to come back in if he's fit, and possibly Son to miss out again because Sissoko is looking like he's actually on a bit of a roll at the moment.
Yes, it's a bit of a strange situation to be in, isn't it, for Son? Because you'd think that when we look at the first 11 from particularly last year, and you think, you know, nobody is going to be able to sort of penetrate that first 11 and get into the team. But if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be Son. And now we've had a few injury problems and you think, oh, maybe we're going to get Son in there somehow. And it's okay, but it's just kind of like steamed past him into the first 11. But on merit, I guess, just about.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, what will be interesting at Huddersfield will be, because I haven't watched a lot of them this season, I won't pretend I have. But the point I made in the West Ham bit was that it is a bit easier to play away because there does seem to be more of a willingness from teams to attack Spurs when they're at home, as we saw against West Ham. And I think West Ham would have sat a lot deeper at Wembley. As a newly promoted club, is obviously quite a, you know, much smaller team, a team that's is going to be battling for every point. I just wonder whether Huddersfield are going to feel kind of that expectation to go forward at home, or whether they'll be a lot happier just to kind of sit, keep men on Kane, keep an eye on Ali, keep an eye on Eriksen, and contain a bit more. And whether Spurs can kind of, how easy Spurs find to get through that. Because what has been the story of Wembley so far has been Spurs kind of struggling to get through.
Yeah, it does feel like it's going to be, I mean, it's quite a tight pitch, I think, at Huddersfield. It's one of those, I think it's a new stadium that they've got there, but it still feels a bit Championship.
Right.
There's no Huddersfield fans listening to this. I don't care who I offend, to be honest. But you know, it's going to be interesting. Well, you know, but like, so who they've played so far this season. They started the season at Crystal Palace and they won 3-0. But since then, they've beaten Newcastle 1-0, 0-0 with Southampton, lost to West Ham 2-0, and drawn with Leicester at home. So with the first big team, or certainly the big six, if you like, that they've played against, do you think there could be a siege mentality that we're going to have to get over as well?
They could certainly kind of want to make a statement by beating us, but then I think every team will want to make a statement by beating Spurs and being the top six team. So I don't think it's going to be anything. I don't think it's going to be anything that Spurs can't contain. And I think, you know, it is definitely fair to say that Spurs would be quite happy to play away at the moment rather than at Wembley, given the away form. So I honestly would not expect them to have too many problems.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think we've got much more to say on Huddersfield, have we?
Yeah, no.
We've not really got much more to say on Spurs either, so I think it's a good time to wrap it up. Thank you very much for joining us this week. We'll be back next week with a Huddersfield review and a preview of the next league game, which I haven't looked up yet. Cheers, Dan.
Cheers, mate.
Bye.